Welcome to the Prophet University audio series. Here are your hosts, Bill Kennard and Tom Grandy.
Welcome to the Prophet University audio series. I'm Bill Kennard, along with our company's founder, Tom Grandy. This program is entitled Effective Collection Techniques, How to Collect the Money While Keeping Happy Customers. Tom, this is your program. Why did you choose this topic?
Bill, we have both been working with contractors for a lot of years, and there seems to be a common thread within every trade, which nearly always centers around the area of collections. Most companies that have been in business for a number of years are pretty good at providing top quality work. Also, most of the same companies have figured out what they need to charge to cover their cost while generating a reasonable profit. The weak point, however, is often collections. There seems to be a fear factor when it comes to asking for the money. As a result, relatively small companies often have $100,000 or more in receivables. We both know cash flow is a number two killer of small businesses, and often collections is at the heart of the matter.
Oh, you're right, Tom. You know, I've been amazed at the number of companies that do not collect on the job for service work or don't collect on installation jobs when the job is completed. Having some basic collection procedures in place is critical as companies grow. For me, I'm glad that you're addressing this area of collections. Our listeners should get a lot out of this presentation. Now, just in case our listeners aren't aware, Tom Grandy is the founder of Grandy & Associates. He has an industrial engineering background, worked as the general manager of a service company, and was the director of company development for the Dial One franchise for a number of years before founding Grandy & Associates in 1987. Grandy & Associates specializes in teaching contractors the business side of their business and has taught over 15,000 contractors how to run profitable businesses. And now, with effective collection techniques, how to collect your money while keeping happy customers, here's Tom Grandy with this month's Prophet University audio series presentation.
Most people who are listening to this presentation are really, really good at what they do. You know how to perform the service call, you know how to change out the equipment, you know how to do the new installation. You're good at what you do from a technical standpoint. If you've been in business for many years, you're probably pretty good at pricing by this point. You've adjusted your pricing over the years, you know what's making money, what's not making money, you know how much you need to charge the customer to cover your cost, plus to make a reasonable profit. The area where many, many companies, however, are weak is the whole area of collections. Let me kind of give you my objective in terms of what our time is going to be with collections today. And this is our collection statement. We want to collect as much as possible, as soon as possible, at the least possible cost, without losing important customers we wish to keep, and for the really hard part, with little or no stress. The biggest problem with collections is fear. Fear of telling the customer how we want to get paid. But if we don't clearly tell the customer how we want to get paid, who sets the terms? Well, the customer does. And guess what? Their terms are never what our terms are. Now, I like to start our presentation off here by talking about a very simple internal collections policy. First of all, this needs to be a written policy. And anybody and everybody who has anything to do with collecting money needs to know exactly what our policy is. First of all, there should be a stated time for invoicing to take place. Should be the same day the work is completed, if at all possible, but at least within 24 hours. Do not wait to the end of the week to invoice. Don't wait to the end of the month to invoice. Invoice the same day or at least within 24 hours. Now, when payment is past due, send out a second notice requesting payment within the next 10 days. Okay. Now, if you're going to do that, you need to create what we call a tickler file. Tickler file is nothing more than a drawer in your desk, your file cabinet, and it's got 31 file folders in there, one for each day of the month. So if you come in on the 12th and you find out Ms. Jones has not paid her bill, you send out another invoice requesting payment within 10 days. You move back from the 12th to the 22nd folder, put a copy of the invoice in there, and then each day when you come in, check that folder and find out who's paid and who hasn't. I fully realize that we have computer systems that spit out receivables and lets us go all kinds of really slick numbers, but there's something about physically looking at a customer's invoice, having that customer come up in our mind, and actually physically giving them a call. Now, if payment's not made within that 10-day period, Then forget the paperwork. It's time to call the customer. Now, initially, we want somebody from the accounting department or somebody within the office to make that initial call, not the owner, not the manager. Why? Because about 70% of the time, once the customer gets that invoice, gets that phone call, they're going to pay their bill. They'll give you every excuse in the book. Gee, you never saw the invoice, must have got lost in the mail, et cetera, et cetera. But once they know that you know that it hasn't been paid yet, about 70% of the time that first phone call will take care of it. Now, for the person who makes that initial phone call, I strongly urge you to get a little 3-ring notebook or something like that and record everything. Record the day you talked to the customer, the name of the customer, the time of day you called, and before you get off the phone, get a commitment from that individual. When will you be sending us a check? Will it be next Wednesday? Will it be a week from Friday? Sometimes a customer will say, well, I was going to write you a check today. Great. Go ahead and do that. We'll send somebody by and we'll pick it up. But get a commitment from them on the phone before you hang up. Now, why do I want to do that? Because if you ever wind up in small claims court, it's the person who has all the documentation that wins the case. Now, if you still don't get paid at that point, then it's time for a second phone call. That's when you get the owner or the manager involved. There's something magical about the owner or the manager making a phone call to the customer, and they get results nobody else gets. Now, I don't want to get them initially involved. Why? Because about 70% of the time, the people will go ahead and pay anyway. But if they haven't paid, that's when you get the owner or the manager involved. They get results that nobody else gets. Now, if you still don't get paid after the owner or manager has talked to them, that's when we're looking at an attorney or a collections agency, neither of which is a really great option. Now, sometimes you can go through all the steps that I just talked about and you still don't get paid. Now, in our particular company, we don't have a problem with collections anymore because it's all on credit card or a COD up front. But several years ago, we did have a problem. It was midsummer and I had about 20 individuals/organizations who hadn't paid me yet. And I'd sent out the notices, I'd made the phone calls, I did everything they knew how to do, and we still hadn't got paid yet. Well, I was sitting home one morning, I was having my prayer time, and I was reading in the Bible about the lady who went to the unjust judge. And if you remember that story, the lady's husband had died, she went to the judge and she asked for legal protection. Now, back in the days of Israel, women didn't have any rights, so the judge said, no, I'm not going to grant that. Well, then scripture records she came back the next day and she asked again. And she came back the next day and she asked again. And she came back the next day and she asked again and then again and again. And pretty soon, you know what happened? Scripture records the judge turned to her and you know what he said? He said, I'm going to give you your legal protection. Not because I fear your God, but basically because you're bugging me to death. I thought about that for a couple minutes and said, Lord, how does that affect those 20 people who haven't paid me yet? And he gave me an idea. Went down to the office that morning. We all got a 4, 6, or 8 foot folding table sitting around somewhere that's not being used. I found one and set it up right next to my copy machine. And I took those 20 invoices. I took the first invoice, laid it on the copy machine, pushed the button, and made 25 copies of it, customer number one. Picked up the second one, 25 copies, customer number two, put it right next to it. Customer number three, 25 copies right next to it. Fill the whole table with 25 copies of everybody who owed me money. And when I was through, I got me the biggest, widest red magic marker I could find. And I wrote diagonally across the invoice itself, your invoice is 128 days late, please pay immediately. And I mailed it to them, did that with everybody on the table. Then the next day when I came in, you know what I did? Picked up another copy. Your invoice is 129 days late. Please pay immediately. Next day, sent them another. 130 days late. Please pay immediately. Sent them one every single day. And you know what? Within 2 weeks, all but three of those people had paid their bill. Now, if you're one of those last three people, and you're getting one of those from me every single day, and you don't intend to pay it, what do you do with that thing when it arrives? That's right. Goes in the circular file. Not going to open it. Just another one from Tom. We've seen that for the last 14 days in a row. Forget it. Well, then I went to step two. It's called peer pressure. Okay. I continued to send them one every single day, those last three people. But with one little change, on the back outside of the envelope, in big red magic markers, I wrote in one case, your invoice is 134 days late. You owe me $1,237. Please pay immediately. Who do you suppose sees the back of that envelope? That's right. The postman, the clerk, the whole world knows you haven't paid your bill yet. And you know what? I got all three of those checks within a week. Now, I had a nasty note with all three of them. But you know what? There was a check attached to it. Well, people say, well, Tom, they'll never work with you again. I said, that's not a problem. I don't want to work with them either. Okay. Now, I have to do a little disclaimer right here. Most of you listening to this probably aware that we have an audio program called the Profit University Audio Series. And every month it's on a different business topic by a different national speaker. And we've been doing this for right at 20 years now. About the 8th or 10th presentation we had was done by a guy by the name of Leonard Sklar. Leonard's out in California. And Leonard's company does over 600 seminars a year on collections. Believe me, he has heard everything there ever was about collections in terms of excuses. And he literally said on his presentation that it's illegal. You cannot write on the outside back of the envelope, which is what I had done. Now, I realize that, but you know what? I still do it if necessary. Now, if a customer came back to me and said, hey, you can't do that, that's illegal. Okay, I'll stop. But it doesn't happen. And you know what? It's very, very effective. Now, why do we want to get our money in as soon as possible? Well, based from the U.S. Department of Commerce, based on what we call the time value of money, that is if you could take your dollars and invest them somewhere else and make some money on them, if you could take those same dollars and invest them somewhere else, after 30 days, my dollar is only worth 97 cents. After 60 days, my dollar is only worth 90 cents. So if I don't get my money in within the first 30 to 60 days, guess what? I've not only lost the profit on the job, now I'm going into the cost of the job itself. Do you know one of the best things you can do for your customer is? One of the best things you can do for your customer? Keep them current. Keep them paid up. Okay? Let me tell you a little story that'll kind of bring that point about. Let's assume for a moment I'm a handyman. I'm not, but let's assume I am. And let's assume every Saturday or every Friday afternoon after work, I get something in my head and I say, gee, I'm going to do this little project on Saturday. So Saturday morning comes around, I go down to my local hardware store, I buy $10, $15, $20 worth of materials, I go home and do my little project, and I feel really good at the end of the day. Now I do that most every Saturday. And now, hypothetically, it's a long weekend, and I decide I'm going to do this major project. So I go down to my same little hardware store, and instead of buying $10 or $15 worth of stuff, I buy over $200 worth of materials. And maybe I forgot my checkbook, maybe I didn't want to put on the credit card, but the bottom line is I didn't pay for it. So what do? I charge it, okay? And I go home and I do my little project. Now, it's a couple of weeks later, I'm getting ready to work on another project, and I need to buy a hammer. Am I going to go back to that same company that I bought the $200 worth of materials from? Well, the probability is I won't. Why? Because I'm scared to death if I go into that store, the clerk's going to jump up from behind the counter and say, Mr. Granny, you owe us $200. Now, the reality is that clerk behind the counter probably has no idea who's paid and who hasn't. But I don't want to risk being embarrassed. So you know what I do? I go to a different hardware store. When I go to the different hardware store to look for my hammer, you know what I might find out? They got a better variety than what I've been buying from for the last 5 years. And the people, all those people are really nice. And they got things they didn't have at the other store. I think I'll just continue to buy things from this store. Okay. Well, what just happened? Because I owed my original hardware store money, I was reluctant to go back there and purchase something else. So the best thing you can do for your customer, the best thing you can do is keep them paid up. And that gives them the freedom to come back and purchase additional products or additional services from your company. Now, I want to go over some checklists with you that might be helpful from a cash flow standpoint. Things we can do before the job begins, why the job is being done, and when the job is complete to help us from a cash flow standpoint. All of these won't be applicable to your particular company, perhaps, but just kind of sift through the ones we talk about and hold on to those ones that have value for you. What about before the job begins? Number one, make sure all payment arrangements are settled up front while the job is being done. And secondly, make sure it's crystal clear how you're going to get paid, by cash, check, or credit card, or billed to an open account. If you'll be crystal clear on the front end of how you want to get paid, that takes care of most of your collections problems. Number three, does a property owner or responsible party fill out a company credit application before credit is extended? Who are the people in your community who stiff you the most? Who are the people who fail to pay their bill or hassle you on the whole process? Well, generally, it's the doctor, the lawyer, the seemingly successful business person with that great big house up on the hill. You can save yourself a lot of problems if you'll just automatically run a credit application on anybody who wants to extend credit with you. And what you often find out is that person with that great big house up on the hill, you know what? They're mortgaged to the hilt and don't have a dime to their name. And that little lady you didn't want to offer the upgrade to, she's got more money in the bank than you and I'll ever have. So save yourself a lot of time, energy, and frustration. Just make it standard policy. Before you extend credit to anybody, you go through a credit application. Number four, has a credit limit been set up on each open account? Should be. Number five, is the status of that account checked before additional credit is extended? That's just common sense. Number six, establish a target amount of credit your company is willing to extend. Generally, a max is 20% of your gross sales. In other words, if you do $1 million a year, you better not have more than $200,000 out in receivables. Now, that's the absolute max. It shouldn't be that high, but set a limit and don't go past it. Number seven, does your contract include a schedule of dates or events when progress payments are going to be made? Okay, and that'll finish this portion. We get paid this portion we paid that. I suspect most of you are doing that already. Okay. Number eight, do we collect in advance at least the wholesale cost of any special order items? Why? Because in case the customer cancels, at least you got your cost out of it, even if you don't have your profit. And number nine, advance payments negotiated. That is a deposit on the job. I want to strongly recommend that you get a deposit on every single job that you do. Okay? You want to do that for two different reasons. One, it helps you from a cash flow standpoint. And the other one is, have you ever been in a situation, especially during your busy season, where you sit down with a customer, you've explained what you're going to do for them, they agree to it, they sign the contract, and before you leave, say, by the way, Mr. and Ms. Jones, I know you'd like me to start tomorrow, but man, things are really busy. It's going to be maybe a week or 10 days before I can start your job. Is that okay? And the customer reluctantly says, yeah, I guess so. Then a week or 10 days, you either stop by the customer's home or call them on the phone to tell them again and get ready to start the job the next day. What's happened? Well, sometimes the job's already been done. The customer didn't want to wait. But I got a signed contract. So, you're going to take them to court? Probably not. But I can almost promise you, if you got 15, 25, 50% of their money in your pocket, they're not going anywhere. Not going anywhere until they at least give you a phone call. Now, what about when the job is being done? Number one, is the customer's written authorization to proceed with work? Want that. Number two, change orders. Make sure all change orders are written up and signed within 48 hours. Now, the real rule of thumb is this. Make sure all change orders are written up and signed before the work begins. Because if you don't, I promise this will happen to you if it hasn't happened already. In the middle of the job, you find a situation you weren't aware of, customer wasn't aware of it. You go back to the customer and say, hey, we found this particular situation. Do you want me to fix it while I'm here? And of course, the first question from the customer is, how much is it going to cost me? Do some quick calculations. It's going to be an extra $500. You want me to do it or not? Yeah, go ahead and do it. Okay. Couple days, couple weeks, a month later, you finish the whole job. You go back. There's an extra $500 on your invoice. You know what's happened? Amnesia sets in. Well, what's this extra $500? Well, don't you remember when we were talking earlier, we were going to charge an extra $500? No, I don't remember that. Come on. A week ago, Wednesday, it's raining outside. Don't you remember what we're talking about? Oh, yeah, I do remember that. So the bottom line is, get them written up, get them signed before the job begins. I had a contractor in my class in North Carolina a couple years ago. He'd spent over 6 months as a subcontractor for a large mechanical company out of the Northeast. During that period of time, he had over $17,000 worth of change orders. Never had one of them written up, never had one of them signed. Came to the end of the project, he took in his final invoice, had the extra $17,000 on there. The superintendent looked him right square in the eye. You know what he said? He said, John, he said, I know you did every bit of that work, but you never written them up. I never signed them. We're not legally responsible for them. Sorry. Bye. And there was nothing he could do about it. Get them written up and get them signed before the job begins. And change orders should be written up and invoiced separately and billed immediately. It's not part of your original job. Get them written up and billed immediately as soon as that change order is completed. Number four, when payments are in staged disbursement, does the customer understand the delay in payment is going to halt production? I mean, this is a case where maybe you're going to do 27 homes, you've done four of them, you haven't been paid for them yet. I want you to stop? Absolutely. Because I can promise you, if you got a problem on the first four homes, you're going to have a problem on the other 23 as well. So what about when the job is done? Number one, are all service tickets and installation paperwork filled out completely, legibly, and accurately? Why? Well, gee, if you're on time and material, how are you going to bill out a service call if you don't know how much time you spent on it or what parts or materials you used on the job? If you finish an installation job and you want to know how you did, how are you going to job cost it if you don't know how much time you used on it and what materials you had? So filling out the paperwork is an important part of it. Number two, when the job is done, is consider putting a promissory, printing a promissory note on the back of your service ticket next time you get them printed up. Okay. Now, when you call to when you get ready to do a service call, we should be calling the customer ahead of time and ask them, hey, how are you going to be paying for this? Will it be cash, check, or charged to a credit card? We don't invoice. How are you going to pay? And let's say, hypothetically, the customer says, well, I'm going to write you a check. And that's fine. So you tell the technician, hey, go on out and do the service call. When you're through, the customer's going to write you a check. Technician goes out there. It's a real quick fix. When he's through with it, the total cost is $75. He goes back to the individual, says, hey, according to the office, you were going to write me a check. The total is $75. Yeah, I was, but you know, my spouse must have taken the checkbook back to the office with him. Could you just invoice me on that? Well, Mr. and Ms. Jones, we can do that, but it's company policy. You turn that little service ticket over. You need to fill out this promissory note on the back and sign it in order for me to invoice you on that. You know what happens? They dig up $75 cash somewhere in the house or maybe find another checkbook somewhere else. Why? People don't like to sign things that look legal. Okay. Number three, our charge customer sent a bill immediately after the job. We've talked about that. Number four, bookkeeping or late fees. If you're going to charge a bookkeeping or a late fee, it has to be stated clearly on the original invoice. You cannot go out there and send out three late notices and then say, hey, we're going to charge you a $25 late fee or 3% of the job or whatever it happens to be. It's illegal. If you're going to charge a fee, it has to be plainly stated on your original invoice when it went out. And of course, any monies held in retention, we want to follow up on rigorously. Why? All of our profit and some of our cost is involved in that as well. Now, when it comes to collections, attitude is extremely important. Extremely important. When I first got out of college, I went to work for a company called Liggett Myers Tobacco Company in Durham, North Carolina. And we made cigarettes. And I was later transferred to a company out here in Owensboro, Kentucky called Pinkerton Tobacco Company. And we made Red Man chewing tobacco, and we made snuff, and we made several pipe tobaccos. Granger was one of them. And I'd been working for the company two or three years out of college, and I was out in the plant one day when one of the managers got not a complaint letter, but a complaint box from a customer. And when he opened up that box, there was a great big nut in there. I mean, it must have weighed a pound. And I was close by. They weren't talking to me, but I could hear a couple of them talking as they read the letter. And the letter went something like this. So, you know, I've been smoking Granger pipe tobacco now for nigh on 43 years. It is the best pipe tobacco I've ever had in my entire life. I would never think about changing brands. But last week, I bought a 3-pound tin of Granger pipe tobacco, and when I opened it up, this great big nut was inside of it. And then he went on to say, and I know it would have smoked good too, but I couldn't get it in my pipe. And I'm looking over there, and everybody's kind of laughing and giggling, and I'm fresh out of school, and I'm wondering, I wonder what they'll do about that. I mean, will they call him? Will they send him a letter? Will they send him some product? What are they going to do? Well, you know what they did? They sent him a whole case, not a package, a whole case of pipe tobacco with a very nice letter of apology. Well, my wife and I were 7 years before we had children, so I had some extra time. And that day, a new hobby was created inside of me. And for the next 2 full years, I looked for any kind of food imperfection I could find. And when I found one, I would write a letter to the company. Now, the first thing I found was a burned cornflake. I mean, is that a major problem or what? Found this burned cornflake in a package of Kellogg's cornflakes. Well, I wrapped that little dude up in a crush-proof box. I took the wrapper off because I'd been in manufacturing long enough to know that they like to see that because it tracks the day, the time, the machine, and the person. So I sent that back to him with a very nice letter saying, hey, I've been eating Kellogg's cornflakes since I was a little kid. I'm going to continue eating them. Just thought you might want to know I found this burned cornflake. Had absolutely no idea what was going to happen. Sent that thing off. About 2 weeks later, there's a knock at my front door. It's the UPS man with 2 cases of every kind of cereal Kellogg's made with a very nice letter of apology. I said, man, this is fun. Next thing I found was a Snickers candy bar. You know how when chocolate gets dried out a little bit, it kind of turns white? Well, I found a Snickers candy bar that had turned white like that on the end. Wrapped that little dude up, sent it back to the Mars company. Again, with a very nice letter telling them how much they enjoyed the product. Just thought you might want to know. A couple weeks later, guess what? Knock at my front door. It's the same UPS guy, except this time he's got 1 case of candy. I mean, every kind of candy Mars made. I did that for 2 full years. Literally, every single company I wrote responded with product, or sometimes they would send you coupons. I remember I found a little rock in a 3-pound box of rice one time, sent it back to them. They sent me 3 coupons for 3 3-pound boxes of rice. Remember, I had a little cloud in one of my Coca-Colas, reported that. Guess what? Coca-Cola man came to my front door and handed me a case of Coca-Colas. Did that for 2 straight years. Now think about it. If I'd sent that first letter to Kellogg's and I'd sent it with the attitude of, you know what, I just opened up Kellogg's cornflakes, there was this burned cornflake inside, I'm never going to have your product again, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. You know what? I don't think I'd ever heard from them again. Attitude makes all the difference in the world when it comes to collections. You get crossways with a customer on the front end, and guess what? It's going to be a long time, if ever, before you get paid. Now, I had a little time several years ago, and I decided I was going to create some cover letters, kind of a cover page to go out with invoices that were past due. And I've got a whole series of them. I'm just going to read you the literature on each one of them. And they start out very gentle reminder, and they get a little bit more straightforward. So if the original invoice hasn't been paid, I send out a second one, but it has this piece of paper on top with a guy looking in a mailbox. And what it says is, we realize the mail is sometimes very slow. However, if your check has not been mailed, please send it as soon as possible. Just a nice gentle reminder. Wait another week or so. If I still haven't been paid, then I send a second one out. This has a different cover page on it. This one has a little guy who's kind of thinking with a little caption over top of it. It says, I don't understand. We sent you the product you requested. We sent you an invoice, and then we sent you a reminder, and there's still no check. Please pay the enclosed past due invoice immediately. And the next one gets a little more. This one says, and I wish you could see the picture, it's a guy just kind of pulling his hair out. It's an accountant. And what it says is, our accountant's getting just a little bit concerned about your past due invoice. And at the bottom it says, please mail your payment today. Not next week, not tomorrow, but today. If that one doesn't work, then the next one, and this one gets just a little bit of sarcastic, it's number 4. It's entitled, perhaps writing a check is too difficult. You have 2 choices. Choice number 1, call our 800 number and place your invoice on a Visa MasterCard. Choice number 2, fax this back to our office, and there's a place on there where they can write their invoice number, their credit card number, their expiration date, their code, and their signature. Okay. And if you still haven't got paid at that one, then the final one says, 5 notices is enough. If payment's not received within a week, we're going to turn you over to the collections agency. Okay. Bottom line is, get your money as soon as possible. And the very final one that goes out is this one. It says, time is running out. Okay. We've sent you notices. We've called you. We're going to send yours to a collections agency if we don't hear from you within the next 3 to 5 days. Now, in terms of other ways to collect your money, a lot of you, I'm sure, listening today have commercial customers. In that case, you might want to try fax reminders. They're very, very, very effective. When I send you a fax, what do I get back on my end? That's right. I get a little receipt that says it's been received on the other end. I have literally sent fax reminders to companies and had somebody call me within 15 minutes. Now, again, every excuse in the book. Gee, we never got your invoice, must have got lost in the mail, didn't go in the right place, but now they know that I know that I haven't been paid. And again, that fax reminder got me paid pretty quickly. I imagine many of you have an invoice that you put out. You might, next time you print them up, you might want to put a little statement on there at the bottom, just have it printed up. Said, if you prefer, your invoice may be paid by credit card. And then have a place for a credit card number, expiration date, code, and a signature. Because what happens a lot of time is people intended to pay their bill, but before your invoice got there, what happened? Well, the refrigerator quit, the car needed repairing, one of the kids got sick and you had to go to the doctor. The money you had set aside has been used for something else. But again, if you can give the customer a gentle way out to pay and still save face, sometimes they'll do that. Here's a couple more collections ideas. Offer a cash discount if payment is made within a certain period of time. Now, when we teach the labor pricing class, one of the things I encourage people to do is take 2% of their gross sales and build that in as an overhead cost, just like rent and utilities. And the reason we do that is so that if a customer does not pay on time, you got a 2% late fee already built into your pricing, and it gives you the option of offering a 2% discount if they pay on time. So you might want to consider doing that. You may have customers attend to question the amount of time you were there on the job, especially if you're on time and material. Well, I've got a plumber in Owensboro here that does this. When his guys show up, they have a little 3x5 card. And it's got my name at the top of it, and it's got the date at the same time. And it shows what time they arrived, and before they leave, they put the leaving time, they do the calculation, they were there for 2.25 hours. Myself or my wife have to sign off on that. And then when her invoice comes, guess what? There's a copy of that little card on the inside. And it states that they were there for 2.25 hours. It's kind of hard for me to argue about what's going on at that point in time. Now, if you send a letter or an invoice to a customer's home and they have physically moved, theoretically, the U.S. Post Office should return that letter to you. But they're not required to. But if you put on the outside of the envelope, address correction requested, or forwarding postage guaranteed, they are required by law to return that to you. Because believe it or not, 20% of all residential customers physically move every year. Maybe somewhere else in town, maybe a different city, maybe a different state, but 20% of the people move every single year. So what I suggest you do is every 6 months or a year, send out some kind of little postcard or some mailing to your entire customer base. And make sure you put the words on the front of the envelope or on the front of the letter, either address correction requested or forwarding postage guaranteed. If you do that, the post office is required by law to send that back to the sender. And at that point, you can clean up your customer base. You'll know who's moved and who hasn't. Okay. Another suggestion is, if you're not getting your literature opened, you might want to put personal or confidential on the outside of the envelope. Sometimes that helps. Another thing you can consider is amnesty. Now, this is the point where you've been fussing with a customer for a prolonged period of time, and you've just gotten to the point you know you're not going to get paid. For whatever reason, right or wrong, you're not going to get paid. It's just gotten to that point. As a last step, try amnesty. What do I mean by that? Send a registered letter to your customer. Say, hey, I know we've not been getting along on this thing. We've gone back and forth. We can't seem to resolve it. I'll tell you what, if you'll pay 20, 25, 30% of the total bill, I'll stop bothering you. We'll write the rest of it off. In that case, you might get 25 or 30% of your original amount. Now, that's better than getting nothing. At this point, you're not going to get anything. So if you can get 25, 30%, you're that much better off. Also keep in mind that you can use post-dated checks. However, if you cash that check before the date on there, you're the ones in trouble, so be careful. And from a negotiating standpoint, Be aware that whatever the customer offers to pay in lieu of the full amount, turn the offer down. Automatically turn it down. People will never have their best offer on the first round. So no, we can't do that, but how about this? Okay? Sometimes you wind up having to go to small claims court, and I actually recommend you do that. Small claims court, it's going to cost you $35 to $60 to file and serve the papers. That's generally done at your county clerk's office. The good news is this. Statistically, one-third of all people who receive notice in the mail pay immediately. Another third on a national basis don't bother to show up in court, and you automatically win the case. Now, that doesn't get you paid. Still got to go back through the county clerk's office and get your money collected. But the good news is, if you'll just file that in small claims court, again, a third will pay immediately, another third won't show up, so you got a pretty good chance of getting your money. And then if none of those things work, then we're looking at an attorney or a collections agency. Now, attorneys are very, very effective today. People are scared to death of attorneys. And attorney letters, from a collection standpoint, are very, very effective, but they're expensive. So here's another suggestion. Once a year, contact your state bar association and get a list of all the past graduates for the past year. And believe it or not, all attorneys are not employed, and all new attorneys are not necessarily fully employed. So go through that list and find somebody who's maybe working out of their house. Sending a collections letter to your customer from that attorney looks just as official as a multi-million dollar law firm. It's just as good, and it'll cost you a whole lot less money. So that's something you might want to think about. And I'm going to ask you the standard question, which I always do in one of my live classes, but obviously you can't respond. I'm going to ask the question anyway. Have any of you used a collections agency that has been really, really good, collects on a regular basis, have no hassle with them, and they don't charge you much money? And usually when I ask that question in class, guess what? Nobody's hand goes up. As a matter of fact, I've been asking that question for over 25 years now, and I think I've had four or five people over that period of time who have said, yeah, I've got a collections agency, works really, really well. And you know what? Four out of those five people use the same collections agency. And it's called Transworld Systems Incorporated, or TSI. They have 156 offices across this country. They routinely collect 60 to 70% of your money on a regular basis. Even invoices that are 4 to 6 months old, they routinely collect at least 50% of it. But the unique thing about them is they don't charge you a percentage of what they collect like most collections agencies do. They charge you based on a one-time fee of $12.99 per account. And for that $12.99, it doesn't matter whether it's a $75 bill or a $7,500 bill. What they do is they send out a series of five follow-up collections letters. And they look really official and actually a little bit scary. But they're very, very effective. Now, the kicker in that thing is so you've got to buy a minimum of 50 accounts up front, so it's going to cost you $400 or $500. They're good for usually 2 to 3 years, but they're very, very good, and it's probably one of the least expensive ways to get your money collected. So as we've said today, collections is the key to getting your money paid. Hopefully, just one of the suggestions we talked about today will have been of value to you. Remember, you can be priced right, you can do the job perfectly, but if you don't collect the money, it's as if you never did the job. So go through our collections policy, see if that makes some sense for you. Look at the different things that we talked about in terms of cash flow tips today. And I would set up collections goals, specific goals for different parts of your company. The goal for your service department, we should collect 100% of the time up front when we finish the job. When it comes to an installation job, we should be getting a deposit, and then we should tell the customer up front, we want the remainder of the money the day we finish. So set specific goals and follow up with them.
As always, we welcome your feedback on each month's presentation. Please feel free to give us a call at 877-202-8891. The vision of Grandy & Associates is quite simple. We teach companies how to run profitable businesses. For more information on how we do that, check out our website at www.grandyassociates.com. Or give us a call at 1-877-202-8891. Profit University Audio Series is produced and distributed by Grandy & Associates. If we can be of service to you, give us a call on our toll-free line at 1-877-202-8891. Until next month, remember, invest your time and invest your money in those things that will reproduce.